The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're already here at the last show of the week. Friday is upon us, heading into another weekend. This Sunday, of course, we'll be up in New York City for a two-day personal appearance campaign, and then we'll follow that up with a stop at Memphis on the way back Tuesday night of next week. So we're getting some good feedback from some of our ministers up in Canada and the Northwest from this past week, the campaigns that we had over in those areas, and we'll look forward to some positive feedback from the upcoming PACs as well. On today's program, we have a lot that we want to try to delve into. I want to refer you to my father's article in the latest Trumpet magazine, Can President Trump Get Control of his Own Divided Government, is the headline. And it's my father's piece, which says a biblical prophecy indicates yes. And so it's a really good article that just sums up some of the things that my father's been speaking about in recent months regarding Amos 7, the prophecies concerning Jeroboam the Second, some fascinating history there, and prophecy together with it. So we'll refer to that a little bit later on. And also, along those same lines, I want to take you back to the that critical 40-day period. Yesterday on the program, you heard that clip from the Attorney General, William Barr, who mentioned how that President Trump came out and announced the fact that he had nominated William Barr for Attorney General on December 7th. And then his confirmation hearings that happened on January the 15th and 16th of this year. So we've often referred to that crucial 40-day period. And if you go back 2 years earlier to the December 7th, 2016 date, and fast forward to January the 16th of 2017, as we've noted before, there was a lot that was happening during that 40-day period. To try to undermine the current president of the United States. Of course, at that time, he was the president-elect. So we'll look at that time period and draw your attention in particular to the intelligence assessment that Barack Obama ordered on his way out of office, this investigation into, at the time, of course, it was sold as an investigation into Russia, but of course it was all an excuse to investigate Donald Trump and his administration. So we'll come to that a little bit later, and then also continue with our study on A Mind Like God's. Well, last night, they have so many people running for president, they had to split up the debates into two evenings. So last night you had the other 10 Democrats, some of the front runners, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, were all on stage. And it's really astounding to watch. You look at the first hour of that debate and the fact that they're basically saying to America that they wanted to protect all these people just streaming into the United States illegally at that. This was the first 50 minutes or so of the debate. And, of course, the president, he's tweeting out things like, what about America? What are you going to do for Americans that are here, that were born here, that are legal? Here they are. And they're all trying to, as I said on yesterday's show, they're all trying to one-up the other. And here they are going on and on and on about how they're going to try to protect illegal immigrants. Well, like I said yesterday, really, if you look at these two debates last night and the night before, it was President Trump who came out as the big winner, and he's not even on stage. Because they're proving themselves to be so radical, so far left, so extreme. David Brooks had a piece in the New York Times. He's a moderate. He's no fan of President Trump. But even he's pointing out all of these extreme positions that the Democrats are staking out. And he's saying, I can't support this. President Trump's the big winner, as I say. Brooks wrote, the party is moving toward all sorts of positions that drive away moderates and make it more likely the nominee will be unelectable. And it's doing it without too much dissent. Nobody's protesting. Nobody's saying anything. They're just going farther and farther to the left. And the ones that have been viewed as moderates, like Joe Biden, he's just going right along with the AOC movement. And Brooks is saying, is America going to go along with this? It says Democrats are wandering into dangerous territory on immigration. The candidates can't let anybody get to the left of them on this issue. So now you've got a lot of candidates who sound operationally open, open borders. Progressive parties all over the world are getting decimated because they have fallen into this pattern. It's not just in the United States. They can't even look around the world and learn from some of the most recent lessons. They can't learn from 2016. It says the debates illustrate the dilemma for moderate Democrats. If they take on progressives, they get squashed by the passionate intensity of the left. If they don't, the party moves so far left that it can't win in the fall. It can't win with these kinds of extreme positions. It's really amazing because here we are in the last days, and the Bible describes our society or compares it to the days of Noah, Sodom, and Gomorrah. And even in this society, it shows just how extreme the radical left has become. If you can't appeal to Sodom and Gomorrah, Brooks has some stats in his article. Only 26% of Americans consider themselves liberal. It says, to win, the Democrats need the support of the 35% that call themselves moderate. Now, you always have, in the primary stage, you always have, you know, the reaching out to the base, the more liberal Democrats. And then after you win, if you come out on top among the 20, then you swing more to the middle. But the point that Brooks makes is that the whole party is swinging so far to the left. How is it going to be able to come back and to appeal to the 35% in the middle? It says here that Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, they said they would eliminate employer-based health insurance. And Brooks points out over 70% of Americans with this type of health insurance are satisfied with it. They're happy with it. And here are these Democrats saying, we want to eliminate it. We want to get rid of it. And a majority of Americans are saying, why? We're fine with it. We're fine with what we have. It says here only 13% of the country said they would prefer a system that has no private plans. Here's what Brooks has to say. Warren and Sanders pinned themselves, and perhaps the Democratic Party, to a 13% policy idea. Trump is smiling. Trump is smiling. That's why he's tweeting out, you guys are killing yourselves. You've lost already. They're up there saying how horrible the economy is. They're up there saying, well, Trump's going on and on about this, this, and this. But in fact, you know, some people are having to work two or three jobs just to survive. Well, 71% of Americans believe the economy is very good or somewhat good. So that's an overwhelming majority that believe we're in a period of resurgence, to use the language we've been using, that the economy's pretty good. The Federalist, it said this: this is not a Democratic Party that anyone would recognize 10 or even 4 years ago. It's making Barack Obama seem moderate, and he was a radical. They wouldn't even recognize the Democratic Party 4 years ago. The Federalist says it's unlikely, for example, that most Americans believe the United States should be an effectively borderless nation. Yet a whole bunch of Democrats on the debate stage Wednesday came awfully close to proposing that absolutely no person be stopped from entering the United States, outside drug and sex traffickers. The idea that most Americans prefer lawlessness to some semblance of order is an untested theory at best. This is what they're going for. The first hour of the debate. Here's what we're going to do for illegals. Here's how we're going to protect illegals. Are Americans on board with this? The Federalist says, do Americans really believe that abortion should be a right until the moment of birth, without any single restriction? All of it funded by taxpayers on demand? Is that what Americans want? Is that what a majority of people want? Well, look at the polls. It says nearly every candidate proposed abandoning our fossil fuel-based economy. They're all on board with the Green New Deal. Every single one wants to abandon our fossil fuel-based economy. Who came out the big winner in these two debates? That would be President Trump. How much will it cost? The Federalist asked. The mayor of America's largest city, Bill de Blasio, explained that whenever anyone asks him how he's going to pay for all of these plans, he just tells them there's plenty of money. The real problem is that it's in the wrong hands. Oh, okay. Just got to take it from the rich. You just have to spread the wealth, spread it around. The Daily Caller mentioned that over the course of these two debates, there wasn't one question on the national debt. Not one question. Nobody cares. How are you going to pay for this? Well, there's plenty of money out there. It's just in the wrong hands. It's pretty amazing how extreme, how radical so many of these politicians are. The president's tweet, he says, all Democrats just raised their hands for giving millions of illegal aliens unlimited health care. How about taking care of American citizens first? That's the end of that race. That's President Trump tweeting out. Of course, he's busy in Asia, meeting with Vladimir Putin, joking about meddling in the election. And of course, all of his opponents, all of his critics are going to jump right on that. See? See, he is a spy. See, he is committing treason. And he's over there taking note of what's happening here at home and shaking his head. That's the end of the race. The radical left, it has full control of the Democrats, the Democratic Party. Richard was saying how that it's, in his mind, very similar to Jeremy Corbyn and his communist takeover of the Labour Party in the UK. Both groups in the minority, because of how extreme their views are. Well, switching over to this 40-day period, from that's not to say they don't have a strong influence. As we keep pointing out, there is this ongoing war, this ongoing struggle. The president trying to, as he says, drain the swamp. The leftover impact of the administrative state trying to take down this president in any way that it can, trying to regain power, a lust for power. On December 9th, back in 2016, then-President Barack Obama, he ordered this review into Russian meddling. They were, as we've pointed out so many times before, they were very concerned about Russian meddling after Donald Trump won the election. They were utterly unconcerned about it before the election. Remember what Barack Obama said on October 18th, 2016? This was before the election, 3 weeks or so before the election, when he said this, clip five.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past, or that there are instances in which that will happen this time.
No serious person could ever think something like that. And then he went on to advise the president, or rather then the Republican candidate, Donald Trump. He advised him to keep his mouth shut and go out and get votes. Well, he went out and got the votes in Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin, and he won the election. And this same president, the former president, Barack Obama, who said no serious person out there would suggest that you could even rig America's elections, he ordered this review. He ordered this investigation. December 9th, 2016, just 2 days after that December 7 anniversary. Remember what the dossier said? That Russia had been cultivating and supporting the and assisting, rather, Donald Trump for at least 5 years. That's from the dirty dossier. And then you have all of these leaks. You have all of these assessments coming out in December. And then, of course, Barack Obama ordering that investigation into Russian meddling. All during that 40-day period. The article from December 9th, 2016. Secret CIA assessment says Russia was trying to help Trump win the White House. That's from the Washington Post. Secret CIA assessment. What's interesting to me, Sam pulled some of this material together based upon a recent article, but what's interesting to me is that even before Obama ordered this full review of Russian election hacking, they had already leaked to the press that Russia helped Donald Trump win the election. So even before the review started, you had John Brennan, James Clapper, Jim Comey. They were out there saying, well, yes, in fact, Russia did meddle. And they did help Donald Trump. They didn't accept the election of Donald Trump, the results of that election in November of 2016. They didn't accept it. And so here's this story. This is right when Barack Obama ordered the review. The Washington Post says the CIA has concluded in a secret assessment that Russia intervened in 2016 to help Donald Trump win the presidency rather than just to undermine confidence in the U.S. electoral system. It wasn't that they just meddled in it to try to undermine confidence. They helped Donald Trump. It says, it is the assessment of the intelligence community that Russia's goal here was to favor one candidate over the other to help Mr. Trump get elected. That's according to a senior U.S. official briefed on an intelligence presentation made to U.S. senators. This was before, or rather on the same day, that Barack Obama ordered the full review of Russian election hacking. That was the Washington Post I read from. The New York Times followed suit just a couple days later, December 11th. It says, Russia's hand in America's election. Here's what the editorial board said at the New York Times. In Mr. Trump, the Russians had reason to see a malleable political novice, one who had surrounded himself with Kremlin lackeys. This is in the New York Times. This is just a few weeks after the presidential election. My father makes the point in this recent article, can President Trump get control of his own divided government? He makes the point that none of this, this attack on the president, this lawlessness coming from the deep state, none of this would have happened were it not for the media being complicit in this attack. They're helping the administrative state, the deep state. It says, at the urging, the New York Times, at the urging of Democratic lawmakers, President Obama has asked the Director of National Intelligence to conduct a full review of Russia's hidden hand in the election. He was urged by Democratic lawmakers. In fact, it was Barack Obama leading the way. He was the one calling the shots. And Brennan and Clapper and all of them were right on board with it. And yet he would be out there, out front, Barack Obama, saying that, look, I don't have anything to do with these investigations. I steer clear of all of these investigations. This is what he said in that end-of-the-year press conference, December 16th, 2016, clip one.
One thing that I have done is to be pretty scrupulous about not wading into investigation decisions or prosecution decisions or decisions not to prosecute. I have tried to be really strict in my own behavior about preserving the independence of law enforcement, free from my own judgments and political assessments in some cases. And I don't know why I would stop now.
And then there's the press just obediently nodding in approval, giving him a free pass. And they have for the past two and a half years. Nobody questions him. Nobody challenges him. Nobody investigates him. He just goes on and on saying that he's been really scrupulous about not wading into investigation decisions. He's the one who made the decision. Here's what we have to keep in motion in order to investigate Donald Trump. We've leaked it out. Brennan and the others say that Russia helped him. This is the same man that said in October of that year. No serious person would think that the Russians could meddle in that way. Now he's ordering a full review, and he wants that full review done before he leaves office. This is a full review that had to be finished in 20 days. And then you know about all that he was doing even days before he left office to make sure that all of the agencies in the intel community could spread the contents of the things like the dossier, the things that would be revealed in the full review of Russian meddling. Here's what he said about this report that he ordered, or this review that he ordered, clip two.
You know, when the report comes out before I leave office, that will have drawn together all the threads. And so I don't want to step on their work ahead of time.
It had already been determined what this report would find, that Russia helped Donald Trump. And that's all they needed to run with in order to then take it a step further. That Russia not only helped Donald Trump was working as a Russian agent. He was in on it. So in less than 3 weeks, 20 days, as I said, America's intel community, all the agencies, the CIA, the DOJ, they cobbled together this report that Barack Obama said would draw together all the threads. And then they got together with Barack Obama, the intel chiefs, January 5th, 2017. They briefed then-President Barack Obama on the findings of this report before it was to be made public. The title of the report, it was 25 pages in length, Assessing Russian Activities and Intentions in Recent U.S. Elections. And as part of that report, tacked on at the end, they had a two-page summary of the dirty dossier, Christopher Steele's work, funded by Hillary Clinton and the DNC. So they brief Barack Obama, and then the following day, January the 6th, 2017, the FBI Director Jim Comey, he waltzed into Donald Trump's office, told him about just parts of the report, really focused more on the dossier. You should know, Mr. Trump, that there's all of this salacious gossip out there about you. And then in the course of that conversation, he lied to Donald Trump, saying that, well, you're not under investigation. Remember, Donald Trump said, well, why don't you tell America that? They wouldn't do it. It was all a setup. Here's what the report says. And keep in mind, those articles from December 9th and December 11th from the Washington Post and the New York Times, they were saying at the start, when Barack Obama ordered the review, they had already released their findings. They knew in advance what they were going after. The report says, we also assess Putin and the Russian government aspired to help President-elect Trump's election chances when possible, by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him. All three agencies agree with this judgment. CIA and FBI have high confidence in this judgment. NSA has moderate confidence. So, who was the guy at the NSA? That was Mike Rogers. He didn't go along 100%, so you don't hear about Mike Rogers anymore. But boy, you sure hear about, you hear from Brennan. You hear from Clapper? You hear from Comey? It's crazy. You read through this this so-called intelligence assessment. Sam went through it recently, and it's just mainly a collection of stories from Russian media outlets. It's really a dossier created by the Barack Obama intelligence community. You've got the Christopher Steele document, and then you've got this sham of a document ordered by Barack Obama, rushed through the intel communities the last 3 weeks before Obama was to leave office. Julie Kelly wrote about this recently, a commentator, saying the Steele dossier has been discredited. Is the IC report next? What about this intel report, this assessment? She calls it an embarrassment to the U.S. intelligence services. It's an embarrassment. These guys, Brennan and Clapper, they should be embarrassed by this. And there was nothing new to it. They had been trying to push the Steele dossier for months leading up to this report coming out in January of 2017. And the Washington Post and the New York Times had already leaked what this assessment, what this review would find some weeks later. Notice what Julie Kelly has to say. It says, the hastily prepared report is akin to a last-minute term paper, carefully formatted with plenty of white space and graphics. It says odd anecdotes are stitched together in a hodgepodge manner. It's filled with repetition and hearsay. It's just like the Steele dossier. This is an official document produced by the U.S. intel community before Barack Obama left office. She writes, one vague passage insists that Putin holds a grudge for comments by Clinton he almost certainly saw as disparaging him. He had a grudge, don't you know? Another factoid is that a Putin pal said Russia would drink champagne if Trump won. They learned that from a Putin pal. Not exactly the kind of conjecture that would pass muster in a court of law. It says the document was released in declassified form. Readers repeatedly are assured that highly classified information supports the intelligence community's conclusions, but that the release of such information would reveal sensitive sources or methods and imperil the ability to collect critical foreign intelligence in the future. So they release the public version is like the high school term paper. And then they say, but now listen, we've got a lot of other serious evidence. We just can't reveal it because we don't want to reveal sources. It says that more than half of the report's substance detailed how RT America, the Kremlin's English-speaking news channel, sought to undermine the U.S. presidential election in 2012. A seven-page annex to the report offered a completely irrelevant analysis of RT's news coverage before Mitt Romney lost to Barack Obama in 2012. Outdated references to Occupy Wall Street, fracking, and the Georgia-Russia conflict are cited. Weird memes and pictures fill a big chunk of four pages. This is the full review that Barack Obama ordered in December of 2016. This commentator writes, I think this is at American Greatness. It says, portions of the ICA appear to be lifted from the June 2016 analysis on the hacking of the Democratic National Committee furnished by CrowdStrike, a private cybersecurity firm. CrowdStrike concluded that hackers allegedly tied to Russia had infiltrated the DNC's server. Perkins Coie, the law firm that contracted with Fusion GPS to produce the dossier, also retained CrowdStrike on behalf of the DNC. What you're hearing here is collusion between all of these groups, the DNC, Fusion GPS, Perkins Coie, Hillary Clinton, Christopher Steele, Barack Obama, John Brennan, James Clapper. It says it's important to remember that neither the FBI nor any U.S. agency inspected the DNC server because they were denied access by Democratic Party officials. That's just the way it is. If the Clinton campaign says, no, you can't have that information, and then, well, if you insist on it, we're going to smash the hard drives. We're going to clear out the hard drives using bleach bit. The DNC gets hacked. The FBI wants to look into it. The DNC says, nope, can't look into it. We're going to have an outside, we're going to have another party look into this and investigate this. And we'll tell you what you need to know. Oh, okay, says Jim Comey. That's fine. They're all in on it. Collusion in plain sight. But the thing that's important here is that it was Barack Obama ordering all of this in his final weeks as president. Listen to what James Clapper said on CNN about a year ago, clip 3.
If it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off a whole sequence of events which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. President Obama is responsible for that, and it was he who tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place. I think that's an important point when it comes to critiquing President Obama.
It is an important point. He's the one that tasked all of them to investigate. He's the one that didn't accept the results of the 2016 election. He's responsible, James Clapper says there. He's responsible for all of these things that led to the Mueller investigation and everything else. More recently, this is from March 25th, earlier this year. Here's what James Clapper said on CNN, clip four.
John Brennan and Jim Comey and I are part of the group that were tasked by President Obama to put together all the reporting we had on the Russian interference, and which we did.
They did that in the course of 3 weeks, less than 3 weeks, 20 days. Where was it from? Trying to find that Julie Kelly article where she talks about how many people voted. Here it is. Let me just read this to you. Reeling from Trump's shocking win and desperate to place blame, Obama in early December 2016 ordered a full review of Russia's election meddling. 20 days later, the review was completed. Hardly sufficient time for an adequate investigation of how a global adversary infiltrated a U.S. presidential election that cost more than $2 billion and involved 130 million American voters. They found out in 20 days. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now we know Russia did meddle. And they did. They did influence the election. And they did help Donald Trump to win. 20 days they found this out. Well, as I say, you want to make sure that you go through my father's latest article. Can President Trump get control of his own divided government? He writes just a few highlights from this article that I read last night. It says, now it seems that the harder the president's enemies work to destroy him, the more their own wicked ways are uncovered. You look at just the way that, as I said yesterday, the way that William Barr came in and what he's doing now. My father talks about all the text messages. I've played for you what Clapper himself said. You can go and read what Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were texting to each other. These messages saying that the president's running this. Barack Obama is in charge here. Barack Obama's leading the investigation. Barack Obama wants to know everything that we're doing. And no one in the media, no one's curious. Curious enough. Serious enough. Honest enough. To bang on Barack Obama's door and say, hey, what about this? What were you up to? Where was the evidence? How come the New York Times knew even before the full review came out what the conclusion would be? My father writes, on January 5th, 2017, just days before Trump's inauguration, President Obama gathered his top intelligence leaders to discuss how to continue the investigation into Trump even after he took office. Donald Trump was about to become their boss. Clapper and those guys. And so here was Barack Obama meeting with the intel community, and they plotted against the incoming president. Here's how we keep the investigation going. He refers to that quote from Rush Limbaugh. This demonic possession. You can't even understand this or explain it. Well, we can because of Revelation 12. But Mr. Limbaugh and others, they don't understand this demonic network. Not like God's church does. My father says the prophecy, this prophecy shows that the primary problem in America, that God has to save Israel from today, is the spirit of Antiochus. When you talk about saving Israel temporarily, as he wrote last year, it's saving Israel from this spirit of Antiochus. And so that's how that we know, as my father says in the subhead of this article, that he's going to be able to, President Trump, to gain control of his divided government, his own divided government, at least for a short time. Amos 7 bears this out as well. When you look at the power and the control he has over his kingdom, so to speak. One last quote here from my father's piece. It says, Mueller's efforts, that's speaking of the investigation, the report and such, Mueller's efforts were part of the deep state that flowed from President Obama's administration right into Mr. Trump's presidency. Those unelected lawyers think they know better than everyone. My father says, I think God set them a trap and then shredded the case for obstruction that Mueller was trying to prove. That is part of God temporarily saving America by the hand of Jeroboam. He set a trap for them. They really, you go back to when that Mueller report came out and how the media, they were just all hyperventilating about how that they were sure this was it. When this shoe drops, they're all going to prison. We've played the montages before. He's going to prison, the president, his family, his sons, his daughters. No collusion, no conspiracy. And then Mr. Barr steps forward and says, no obstruction. End of story. And now he's investigating the investigators. And now he's out there, as you heard yesterday, he's out there joking about his proficiency with respect to spying. The tables certainly have turned. When we come back, we'll continue with our study on a mind like the creator gods. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
On Wednesday's program, following our trip through Spokane, Washington, a trip down memory lane, as I said the other day, I talked about growing up in the Worldwide Church of God and just all of the blessings and the opportunities that I had as a youth in God's church. My father, in those meditation tapes that he produced back in the 1980s, In one excerpt, he said, "I think our young people need to learn to see that God will open doors for them. He will respond according to their faith, just like that of an adult. And I think that's an area where maybe we really need to do a lot more with our young people and make them realize they don't have to just be in YOU to receive amazing blessings from God." That's the youth organization in the church at the time, YOU. Youth Opportunities United, I think, is what it was the acronym for. But my father says here, there can be all kinds of opportunities. He's talking about opportunities in addition to YOU, in addition to youth activities in the church. If they will simply go to God and trust God and learn to obey and learn to seek God out and learn to work on their prayer and study and getting God to open doors for them. He says, I think that's a big area where we really do not touch on it like we should. And we need to concentrate on it more because I think there's a lot of valuable lessons that our kids are passing up because they think, well, we're so limited. We're in the church. We obey the Sabbath. We can't participate in Friday night activities. And so, as he was saying there, you see it as a negative. And my father was saying what we need to emphasize, even to our children, is that it's an advantage to be in God's church, in God's family. It's an advantage to have God on your side. It's not an obstacle. In Acts 20 and verse 32, the Apostle Paul in this ministerial conference at Ephesus, or Miletus, he says to these ministers, "And now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified." Paul says, "I've coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yes, you yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me." Paul was working on the side as a tent maker. He was providing for himself and serving in the church and giving of himself to God's work. He says in verse 35, "I have shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it's more blessed to give than to receive." If you're in God's church, whether as a youth or an adult or anywhere along the way, it's a blessing to learn this way of life, to learn the principle of God's law, which is the way of give, the way of love, the way of service and sacrifice. That's an advantage, a tremendous advantage. As I say, it's not an obstacle. Acts 18, just backing up a few verses, Acts 18:1, it says, "After these things, Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth and found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome and came unto them." So Paul arrives in Corinth, and he finds these two, Aquila and Priscilla, two individuals that had been expelled from Rome, and so they set up shop in Corinth. They were probably fairly wealthy. They had the means to take in Paul. Verse 3 says, "And because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers." So they had the common trade. They were both tent makers. Verse 4 says, "And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. So Paul, after he meets with Aquila, he finds a place to stay. He continues with his business, tent making. And then, as his custom was, he goes straight into the synagogue on the Sabbath and starts preaching the truth of God. Verse 6, it says, "And when they opposed themselves and blasphemed, he shook his raiment and said unto them, Your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From henceforth I will go to the Gentiles." So he met with a lot of resistance, particularly among the Jewish community. And so then he directed the message of God toward Gentiles, toward those who would receive the message, those who would accept the truth. Verse 7 says, "And he departed thence and entered into a certain man's house named Justus, one that worshipped God, whose house joined hard to the synagogue." So this was one exception. This was actually a Jewish leader that did believe, that did accept the Apostle Paul and his message, God's truth, the true gospel. Verse 8 says, "And Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Eternal with all his house, and many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized." So this was a fairly prominent Jewish official. The whole house of Crispus converted to the truth, living in this home that was adjacent to the synagogue. God brought this man and his family in through the Apostle Paul's message. But going back to Paul's first arrival to Corinth, he arrives in this city. There were no converts yet. The truth hadn't been preached yet. And yet here is Aquila and Priscilla opening up their house, opening up their hearts, opening up their family to the Apostle Paul. The spirit of give, the spirit of service, the spirit of sacrifice. They served others. And then, of course, you see Paul's example, as I just read to you. "I've shown you," he said to those ministers at Ephesus. "I've shown you how to do this, how to live God's way, how to support God's work." Never forget, it's more blessed to give than to receive. To be in God's church, to learn the way of give, to learn the way of love, that is an opportunity. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. As my father said in those tapes from the 1980s, our children, they have more opportunities being in the church than they ever would have had they not been in the church. We have more opportunities in the church, in God's family, than we ever would have on the outside. One of our ministers from Canada sent me this feedback. One of the attendees at the Red Deer Pack, he had been in God's church for a long time, up until 1988, and then he dropped out, and he didn't keep track of any of the splinter groups, so he had no idea where God was working. And it was only just recently that someone at work, he's an old man now, but someone at work gave him, I think, one of our booklets. And then he read that and then contacted the church to request another booklet. And then because of that, I guess he got the Trumpet magazine for free automatically. And it was just days after that that we sent the invites to Trumpet subscribers. So he became a Trumpet subscriber just days before those invites went out. Well, he came along to the Red Deer Pack and he knows now that he needs to get back right with God and get back into the church of God and get back into the family where this way of give is taught. If you want to acquire a mind like God's, serve God's family. Serve in the work of God. Serve like Aquila and Priscilla. Serve like the Apostle Paul. And know as you do, just know that it's more blessed to give than to receive. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're putting the finishing touches on another week of broadcasting here from our headquarters studio in Edmond, Oklahoma. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.